All right. How's the second day going for everybody? Excellent. Good sessions this morning? Good. I saw one person shaking their head. Everybody else said yes. I won't ask what session. Welcome. Hopefully you are enjoying the show. My name is Matt Milner. I'm an instructor for Pluralsight, where we do Microsoft developer training, and now kind of branching out beyond that, we do online training. If you've seen us here at the show, we've got a booth out there. I've got some cards up here if you want a free trial. Our prices are significantly lower from last year, so if that scared you off, be sure to check it out. I'm also a consultant, so I split my time between teaching and doing development. And for a lot of years, I've been focused on connected systems and web services, things like BizTalk and Workflow and WCF. Before that, I did ASP.NET and web development, which I'm starting to get back into as well. One of my favorite topics these days kind of combines those two things, which is the web API. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. I want to set some expectations. Right? The title is all about building services for phone and tablet. I will not show Windows 8, and I'm not going to show Windows Phone for two reasons. One, I was kind of hoping when I proposed the session that Windows 8 beta might have come out by this time, but we're not there yet. So the things I want to show aren't quite there. And two, if you look at the schedule, most of the other sessions at this time are Windows Phone and Windows 8. So if you want to focus on Phone and Windows 8 and programming those, that's the place to go. But here we're going to talk about the web API and building the services to power those devices and provide the services for your applications, whether they be Windows 8, Phone, web applications, or other rich client applications. So my goal today is to talk a little bit about why we have this web API. There may be some people that wonder why we have this new thing, why the focus on HTTP, and then walk you through and give you a sense of the features, give you a sense of how this set of tools works to help you build services and clients focused on HTTP and messaging between tiers. So we'll talk a little bit about how Web API integrates with MVC. We'll talk about content negotiation for the content format we want, message handlers, hosting, some unit testing. How many of you do unit testing? I love that. More hands go up every year. It's a good thing. And talk a little bit about the mobile client play. So out of curiosity, as we get started, how many of you are building web services today for your applications? Most of you. How many of you are using WCF? About the same amount. How many of you are using MVC to build services? Okay, a few. All right, good. So, before we dive into the why and all of that, what exactly is Web API? And put simply, it is a programming model for working with HTTP services. Now, I say working with as opposed to building because we have not only the server components for building our services, but we also have in the API an HTTP client. So one of the struggles people have often with working with HTTP services is, great, I have to use HTTP web request, right? Or I get to use HTTP web request, if we look at it positively, right? And I pull down a stream of data, and then what do I do? And so the team has worked very hard on creating for the web API a client-side programming model for HTTP services, where I want to be able to go out and get some resource from a service and bring it back and have a typed resource that I can program against if I choose, or if I want that stream of data or that JSON, I can use that as well. So the API really does cover both the client and the server, and we'll take a look at both of those today. Now, I'm going to put a couple disclaimers as we go into this. One, keep in mind, I don't work for Microsoft. I have some inside knowledge from talking to people, but obviously we'll share what's public. Fortunately, the timing is great. Web API as part of MVC4 was just released in beta hours ago, yesterday, I think. So you can go and get it and access it, but it is in beta. It's gone through lots of kind of evolution as it's gotten to that point. And there are things that will change from now until the time it ships. API changes, not just class name changes, but the way things are structured and the way things work. So tried to stick pretty close to the stuff that I know is probably solid, but there will be things that that will change as we go along. So why do we need the web API? When I asked for a raise of hands, a lot of you said, hey, you're building services with WCF today. Some of you said you're building services with MVC today. Right? Why do we need a new API? Well, for those of you that are doing WCF, how many of you are building web only or HTTP services using like the web HTTP binding and the web GET and POST? Okay, about half. How many of you really like that and think it works well? Oh my goodness, nobody. maybe once involved. I'll be brave. Nobody. What don't you like about it? Complexity. Right? What's the Spider-Man saying? With great power comes great responsibility. WCF, it's kind of with great power comes great complexity. We have with WCF, right, this framework that was meant to be all-encompassing, to address everything. So we can have these bindings where we can use HTTP or TCP or queues or whatever we want to plug in. Right? We have pluggable security models. So we can use WS security or we can use SSL or we can use a variety of things there. We have formatters so we can do JSON or XML. Right? We have all parts of that stack completely extensible. And it's set up in such a way that we can host a service and expose it over all those different complex things. Right? As we get into wanting to expose it in more and more ways, we have to do more configuration. So one of the problems that people have had with that is, gosh, I just want to get a service up and listen over HTTP and let people post data and get data back. How many of you that are doing MVC chose to do it that way for that very reason? Because it's simple, you're already in an MVC app, and it was just easy to get that post and response, and you didn't want to deal with WCF. Some of you? Yeah. How many of you have been MVC because you just love it and you don't want to look at WCF? Okay. I like WCF. I'm not going to knock WCF a lot, but there's a lot going on there when what you really want is just to get down and use HTTP. Right? There's a lot of other pieces, a lot of things, frankly, you don't need to do an HTTP-focused surface. So the web API was introduced to try and address that. Right? And actually started as an offshoot of WCF. Right? They were leveraging a lot of the underlying pieces of WCF, trying to strip out some of the things that you wouldn't need and make it a lot simpler and a lot closer to HTTP for you so you could get down and make it easier to work with HTTP headers, right, and status codes and things like that. So they were introducing things along the way. We got things like the web fault exception that allowed us to set status codes when there was an error. So they tried to do that. And as they were working through the web API, you know, they were making that nice. They were doing a really good job. But they still weren't able to answer the question in a lot of cases for a lot of customers of why would I do this WCF web API, as it was earlier called, instead of MVC, right? MVC, I have this very simple model, right? And yes, you're making it simpler, but this is still easier, right? So there was a shift along the way, and they said, all right, well, you know what? We get that. And we see both sides of this. And so, as we'll see, Web API, while it's shipping with MVC, it's closely aligned with MVC and plugs in very nicely, we'll see you can also self-host it just like you could a WCF service. Right? But there are a lot of things that, as we'll see along the way, where they've tried to simplify that. So aside from the complexity, what are some of the other struggles with WCF, or is that just it? I got a lot of hands for unit testing. How many of you unit test your WCF services? Wow. Half the room said that they're unit testing and two people unit test their services. Can we assume that that's because of the original point of the complexity? Right. It's hard, right? And so as we'll see, the web API, those are the kinds of things they tried to address, right? What are the pain points in building those services with WCF? Testing is one of those, right? We've got a lot of sealed classes, we've got a lot of statics and things like that that make that tough. So the next question, though, is, well, why this focus on HTTP? Right? WCF is great, and it lets us do TCP and queues and all these other transports. Why this big focus on HTTP? Right? And this is where we get into the phones, the mobile play, the Windows 8, the tablets, all those things. Right? HTTP, for one, gives us huge reach. Right? All those devices that you've got out there are going to be able to do HTTP. Right? The phone you have in your pocket, or that you're checking the news on right now, that phone, right, does HTTP. Those tablets are darn sure going to do HTTP, right? They will be able to talk to services that do HTTP. Will they do SOAP? Maybe. Probably. But do you want to program that on your in your phone programming model? More and more you're seeing HTTP. The other thing is that HTTP is an application protocol. We don't necessarily need SOAP as a layer on top of that to build services and build applications. HTTP, I've said that too many times this session, provides a model for us to build our applications, right, and supports the kinds of things we typically need to do in a service when we post messages, when we retrieve data. Right? And the protocol has been optimized over years and years. Right? We use it every day as we go out and browse the internet and go to websites. Right? The biggest application in the world, the internet, is built on HTTP. We've got caching, we've got hardware acceleration, right? We've got all these things built into that protocol and everything around it that it makes sense to use that if we want to build services that are going to scale, services that are going to have that reach, and services that are going to let us go out and touch the most customers. All right. So we'll start by looking at Web API integrated with MVC. All right, that's kind of the way it's packaged. That's the kind of the default model. We have MVC for building these web applications. A lot of you said, well, you know, it works great for that. Right? And I kind of thought I would build services using that as well and using that controller model. Right? Web API is meant to come in and complement that programming model. Right? We want you to be able to go into your MVC application, use the same kind of concepts and ideas, but build out an API that is a little bit richer than what you can do with MVC today, and that has all sorts of hooks in there to help out with things, like I said, like testing and what you truly need in a web API. So one of the problems I have with MVC and building web APIs is this. By default, those controllers, right, use three things in their routes. What are those three things? I'll make you guys do some work today. Controller, action, and ID. Well, if I want to go out and delete something, right, or add something, maybe in the URI, if it's a route to a web page, that's okay. But if I'm thinking about my service, I start to get a little uncomfortable when I see delete in my URI. Right? Now, I'm not completely on the Puritan hardcore side, and I still get uncomfortable. There are other people who, you know, they would pull hair out. They would leave that job. They wouldn't do it if they had to have delete in the URI. I just don't like it. And so I really don't want that action piece in there. Now, you can do some things with the controllers and the routes to change that. But that's just one example of, you know, MVC was built and intended to be used to build those web applications with the views and with the kind of output that you want in a web app. Web API is built to provide data, to provide resources, and to provide me the operations to go and work with those resources. Right? So you put these things together, right, and you kind of get the best of both worlds here. Now we have MVC. We have this web API that allows us to build our services right inside our web application to support it or to augment it. And we get all the kind of the pieces of the WCF model, not necessarily actual bits, but the idea of, right, extensibility, plugging in various kinds of formats or serializers, dealing with the variety of those issues that come along with building services. So let's go out here. And we'll do a new project. So I'm going to do a new MVC for web application. Call that web API. And so now when we do an MVC application, we've got a variety of things. How many people saw Scott Guthrie's talk yesterday? Most of you. Okay. You've probably seen this. You've seen this dialogue. We have the standard web applications, but also they've added mobile applications, single-page application. And our focus is the web API, right, allowing us to go out and build that. So the view engine may come in handy, but we won't use it all that often. So we'll create our web API. And it's going out and pulling in some NuGet packages, hopefully. There we go. So what do we have? Well, we've got no models yet. We've got our home controller, which is our standard kind of MVC controller. Very basic, gives us back a view. And then we have this new thing called a values controller. Right. This guy is derived from API controller. So this is our base class if we want to build a controller for a web API. It's going to provide a lot of the helpful kind of core infrastructure for us. And then we've got a series of methods here. So we've got a get that out of the way. A get that returns a list of strings or an enumerable. We've got a get by ID that gives us back something. We have post, put, and delete. And notice we've got the URIs there with no action in them. Right? So API/values, if you do a post to that, is going to map onto this operation. If you do a put to API values and then an ID, it's going to call this put operation. It's a little bit different than what we see with MVC. With MVC, the routing is going to be determined by our action. Right? The action that comes in that URI maps onto an action or a method in our class. Here, though, we're going to map those operations based on that HTTP verb. So notice if we do a get to values, right, it knows to call this operation, but if we do a get to values and we pass an ID, it's going to call this one here. Right? So if we simply start that up, get that started, we'll get a nice helpful documentation page, which is data information about web API, but isn't the actual API. So if I go out to API/values, I'm going to get back a bunch of data. Let me cancel that. The network here and start capturing. If we go and look, we can see down here, right, we've got some data coming back. Right? Now, for all you web folks, what's the format of that data right now? JSON. Nobody said XML. Good. All right. We're in good shape. It's JSON, right? Why? Because the browser understands JSON. Right? If we come back in here and take a look at what's going on there, right? I was able to invoke this particular controller just by going to API values. Now, for you MVC folks, what do you suppose I do to tell my MVC application how to route that information? Well, I go out here and I register routes. So the key here is that we're going to use this new extension method, this map HTTP route, instead of map route like we see below. We put in the default route. The convention here is just to put the controllers for APIs under the API directory. You certainly don't have to do that. It's just to help avoid collisions with the controllers you might have focused on your UI or your MVC piece. Right? And we've got the API, the controller, and then the optional ID. So as I said, the action is missing here. It's the HTTP verb, really, that's going to determine for these HTTP routes what method is going to get called. Right? So let's go back here to the values controller, and let's call this get foo. Right? It has nothing to do with values or strings. Oh, thought I left that open. There we go. So it's really just the convention that what does that operation start with? We don't really care about what it ends with or how it's different, but if it starts with get, it maps on to the get verb. If it starts with post, put, delete, all right, it's going to map on to those respective operations. Right. Now, you don't have to use that. You can still, if you like this model, right, you can still go back to the HTTP get. You can use the attribute model that you use with MVC if you want to focus on that, if you want to call these different things. But the default is convention over configuration over all this attribution. Now, by default, we got back some JSON. Let's take that URI. Go into Fiddler here in the Composer. I'm going to do a get, and certainly if I do accept application, spell it right, JSON, and I go execute that, right, I get back a 200. It's encoded, all right, and we can see we get back the JSON value there. But more importantly, if I go to the Composer and I change that to text XML, now I get back XML. So out of the box, I've done nothing. I did file new project. My server already is able to do content negotiation with the client. If they ask for and say they want JSON, they get JSON. If they ask for and say they want XML, they get XML, right? And I didn't have to do anything special out of the box to do that. And then we'll see in a little bit that I can go a step farther, and I can say, well, I want to support something besides JSON or XML. Those are great, but I want to do something different, right? Or I don't like your out-of-the-box JSON. I want to do something different. I've got my own custom JSON model that I want to use. So the question was, is it possible to return an action result from the API controller? I won't say no. It may be possible. I haven't tried it. When you think about the controllers, here, and it'll become more obvious in a minute when I switch this up, the controllers in Web API are really focused on particular resources, right? Values. Doesn't make a lot of sense. Maybe a resource that's an order, right? An invoice, an employee. You would have a controller that's all about that particular resource. And that controller's job is not to return views or other things. It's to return those resources or to accept those resources and update them, create them, delete them. Right? And so we don't really have the action results here because you'll more than likely either return an object, right, like an order, or you may have the situation where you're thinking of, well, I might normally return an action result to redirect somebody, right, or I might return an action result of some sort to tell them that they're unauthorized. Right. In the Web API model, typically, because we're focused on HTTP, you're going to do that right inside of your operation. You're going to return them a status code of 401. You're going to send them back a status code with a redirect and the location to go to. Right? You're going to have control over that at the API level. All right. Let's pull up something that's a little farther along. So questions about that so far? We haven't gotten very far. Let's go in here. So I'm going to go beyond the values a little bit. Having to put this away. I'm going to go beyond that. I've got a couple of classes here that I'm using for models just based on a conference like this. So I have sessions. You can see I have a speaker property on there. Speaker has a name and a Twitter handle. Just very basic. I'm using the entity framework 4.3, whatever the latest entity framework is, and the SQL compact. So it's all being stored off to my database using the entity framework. And then, of course, I have my my typical repository pattern. So I combine those things together for simplicity. I've got a conference repository interface here. And then my conference repository just wraps my data context. So nothing too exciting in there. But I'm going to use that then in a controller, or a couple of controllers. So I've now taken that values piece and just updated it to be more strongly typed, to have something a little more interesting. So now I have a sessions controller that allows me to go out and get all the sessions or to post a session. Right? Typically, if I'm creating a new item with HTTP services, I'm going to post to the collection to create those items. Now, what do you notice about the parameters here to these operations? That's my model. If this were a plain old MVC controller, how would you expect that model to get populated? Little gnomes. Model binding, right? So we've got model binding with MVC, where it can pull values from the form input, from the query strings, from the body, right? All these different places. We take advantage of that same model binding in the web API so that I get a nice, clean interface. I can focus on those objects if I want to, and the model binding takes care of populating that object for me and passing it to me. I've got model state. I can check if it's valid. All that good stuff is available in my web API as well. All right, so if we look at our controller here, we've got an iConference repository getting passed in. So I've got some inversion of control here, some dependency injection. How many of you are using dependency injection in your applications? About the same number as are doing unit testing. Okay. Not surprising. So just like with MVC, I have the ability to set that up. So we saw, right, we had our routes. That really didn't change. So now I'm going to have API/sessions, API/session, and API/speakers, I think it was. But I'm going to go a step further, and I'm going to configure my API service. Now, for a lot of you, when we talked about WCF, you said it was complex. I'm guessing a small part of that might have been based on the configuration. We all love XML config files, I know. So, XML is not necessarily a friendly thing to edit. WCF configuration, in my mind, is a lot easier than, say, WSDL. I don't want to write that by hand. I know, it's a stretch. But what they've done in Web API is they said, look, we're just going to have a nice, simple, imperative configuration model in code for you to go out and configure this thing. So we're not going to go out and force you to use the config file and do all that. You can do it right here in the global ASAX, or you're on start. So I created a function called register API, and I pass it this configuration. And in here, I'm going to set up my service resolver. So here I'm using, Ninject. Ninject in this one to set up a dependency resolver, right? And I just go in and tell it, for HTTP configuration, service resolver, set the resolver. Here's two delegates, two funcs, right? One to try and get a single object, one to try and get a collection. Right? And then I've set up my kernel up here. So anytime you see that interface, you should get the conference repository. Right? So pretty straightforward. We can pass that in. And now anytime we go and try and create one of those controllers, it'll use that service resolver. And we'll come back to some of these other pieces here as we get into it. So we have our sessions controller out here with our repository, and we should be able to go out and grab these things. So if I go look at my default page here, got all sorts of good stuff, but I have a couple templates out here. I'm just going to go out and use some jQuery to do get JSON, and I'm going to populate these templates after my page loads. So in order to go get this data, right, on load, I simply go out to /API sessions. Because it's a get JSON call, the accept header obviously is going to be JSON. We'll get back the JSON data, and I can put it in my template and render it out to the screen. Right? Probably the same sort of thing you're doing if you're building MVC services. Right? And maybe the same thing you're doing if you're doing WCF services. So if we go out here, we can see there's our talks. I didn't fill the database a lot, but there's three. I know Jeff's doing a talk right now on jQuery, and I knew Scott did one yesterday as well. So we can go out, we can call and pull that data back. We can, of course, go look at our speakers, and we can get those back as well. All right. So I'm going to dig into a couple of other things here as we go along. Before I do, questions on just the basics we've seen so far? No? Okay. How many of you are familiar with OData? Is this the same group? I should keep track of which hands are going up. It's about the same number. So OData, all right, provides a set of conventions and a mechanism for us to write data-focused services. It's made up of several different pieces. There's a standardized formats in terms of JSON and Atom. But one of the really cool things about OData is it provides a kind of standard mechanism for defining queries in URIs, being able to put a filter, essentially a where clause, in your URI in a standard way. So any OData service that you go out and talk to, you should be able to use that filter syntax to pull back the particular data. Well, that's a web-focused tool. This is a web-focused tool. And they said, you know what would be really great is if we could allow you to take this web API and without much work at all, enable you to put OData queries over some of these items. So I have my conference sessions out there, or I have my my speakers, and I want to go and query those things. Okay. Right now, I'm just exposing a collection of sessions. In a typical web service, often you'd have to add operations, right? Get session by title, get session by start date. For OData, right, you expose this collection, and then we can go out and query that item. So on my sessions controller, you may have noticed, instead of just an IEnumerable or list of sessions, I'm actually returning an IQueryable of session here. And so just by doing that, just today, just by doing the iQueryable, that now supports the OData query syntax. Now, this is one of those things that may change as we move from beta on. So let me just make sure that's up. So let's go to our composer here, because this will be a little more, get the right URI. So if we do application JSON, we go do our get, just to make sure that's coming back. We've got our three different items coming back there. But now let's go into the composer and do a query string, and we'll say filter equals, and then we'll say title EQ web API. Oops. Filter equals title equal. Bad request. What a friendly error message. Oh, the title doesn't need to be quoted. It just needs to have a T in it. Because it's not the tile. It's the title. Well, I don't have a status code yet. Oh, I've killed the web dev server. Good job. Let me try that again. Did I mention it's beta? targeting the same thing. Well, let's try it in here. So sessions, I said, and then, oops. Filter equals title equals. Oh, excellent. I'm getting some sort of a redirect for the for my themes for jQuery UI. Okay. That's a problem. So, this should work. I clearly have something going on with my jQuery UI getting stuck in there somehow because it's looking for a particular image file that is trying to grab that thing. But we should have be able to use this query syntax that we use for OData. So, skipping items and grabbing a certain number, so being able to do paging of the data by doing these queries, being able to filter this data and pull these things back should all work for us here. Let me just try one thing running. Did I kill it again? It did. Let me try it in debug and see if that seemed to work fine yesterday. Ah, there it is, debug mode. So now we've got back our speaker start time. You'll notice it stops here. There's three sessions, but we only got back the one. Apparently you have to run this in debug mode for that to work. I'm sure that'll be fixed. And it probably has something to do with the fact that I'm using the web dev server instead of IIS Express. But we can use that query syntax then, and now I've just got back the one session, so I can filter those things. Like I said, you can use skip and top, so you can grab pages of data. You don't have to get the entire set of data. So it's really nice to have that capability out of the box to be able to take that set of resources and search for the ones you want, right, to get back the particular resources you want. All right. So we've got a couple of other things here. One, action filters. You have those in MVC today, right? They allow you to apply attributes generally to a particular operation and have that particular filter run before the operation. So we can use this for things like validation, authorization. You've got error handling when you do those sorts of things. And we have filters as well in the web API, slightly different base classes and interfaces, but the same idea. The reason those bases are different is one of the key things with web API is they wanted it to be highly testable. Now, we talked about WCF and how that can be tough to test because of all the kind of intrinsics and statics and sealed classes, but MVC as well has a pretty strong dependency on ASP.NET and the pipeline in a lot of cases. So for all the different pieces that you might want to test, they wanted to be able to pull all those out. And so the action filters depend on classes that are new with the web API, the HTTP stack, that are focused on request message, response message classes that they have in that API, easily mocked, easily tested as you go through. So we have these filters. I'm going to show you one. I know for a fact that this one is probably not going to work because I've been having trouble with it. But we'll give it a try and see. A small problem with the JavaScript bundling and changing of files. So if we go in here and look, and see we've got a filter here, and you can see this in some of the samples that the team has put out as well, very similar. But I have an action filter, right, action filter attribute, and essentially what it's going to do is validate that object before it goes into the method call. And so we'll look at the model state, we can tell if it's valid. All right, if it's not, we walk through all the different items in the model state and create a JSON object to send back to the client. So I have JSON object. We've got some JSON value and JSON array. There's a whole programming model around creating JSON data. So here we're just creating this JSON object, which would essentially go back and have an array where it would say, speaker, and then it would have an error message. Or it would say the title and an error message. All right, so just be simple JavaScript objects with those, which can then be used with the unobtrusive JavaScript validation that we have. So in our controllers, go to our sessions controller here on the post. We'll put that attribute on, so if we try and post a session, we'll get validation. And then if we go look, right, we've got all of our validation stuff set up here on the particular inputs. We've got the spans to show the validation errors over there as well. So we'll run that again now that we've put it in. I was going to say, let's see just how many times Matt can kill the web dev server today. I'm doing jQuery templates later today. Got the start. Oh, this isn't going to work because I forgot one thing. On my model for session, we'll mark that speaker as required. So that way when we do the model validation, it'll come back. Query template, so we won't give it a speaker, right? And if I try and submit now, right, it's a little bit goofy, but if I try and submit now, right, I have the client-side validation kicking in already, right? So some of these items that are required, the unobtrusive validation's kicking in, that hasn't gone back to the server yet, but let's do I don't think this is probably the right time for my session, but put it in. Come on. Nope. Oh, there we go. Object is null. Yeah. So I have a small problem with my my unobtrusive validation scripts. Now, oh, good. Not loading quite right. Excellent. All right. So we'll fix that up just so it continues to work. But those work on the same kind of premise as you'd see in MVC today. Right? Now, what we have new in the web API is this notion of message handlers. Right? And so here, what you'll see is over on the far right is our controller. And what happens when we get a message coming in is that a message comes into the HTTP server. That's hosted in IIS or hosted somewhere else. And then it goes through a series of these message handlers. Now, the HTTP server itself is actually a message handler. Right? So we just have this chain or pipeline of these things processing our requests and our responses going back out. And after we get through those, the dispatcher then figures out the controller and dispatches our request, and the responses come back through. Now, this message handler piece is pretty important because we have it on the server. It allows us to plug in all sorts of cross-cutting concerns here before we even get to a particular controller or action or the notion of dispatching. So we can have code in our message handlers that impacts the dispatching. Right? We can dictate through those message handlers some parameters that might cause a different controller to get used or a different formatter, for example. We don't want JSON or XML. Right? Now, the other reason these are important is I mentioned we have a client programming model too. We have message handlers on the client. Right? The client has a symmetrical programming model where you create a client, you give it message handlers, it passes messages down through those message handlers. Ultimately, they come over to the server where they go through message handlers as well. Right? So if we look at an example of a message handler, one of the things I want to do, let's run this and make sure it works, and then I'll show you how I did it. So we've got all these sessions. You might notice my ugly little calendar icon here. I did mention I mostly program in the middle tier, right? You're looking at the extent of my UI design, all thanks to jQuery. So if I go out and click that, what I want is I want a calendar entry. So you can see I get a little pop-up for this ICS. I open. You get to see all my email. And then I have an event All right, for the title, and I've got the start time and the end time in here for the event. So I was able to take that data. Oops. Now what's key is, what's key is that I'm using the same controller, right? Or in this case, the session controller. I'm getting a particular session by ID, and notice my code in here is all about just getting that particular item and returning the session. I'm not worried in here about what format you want or what format you're going to get or what you can handle. All I care about is I'm going to return a session. And so the formatting is the job of formatters, which makes sense. So I have a calendar formatter here. And to take part in the content negotiation, right, it's going to add to its set of supportive media types text/calendar. So by default, when a request comes in, there's a default format selector, right? And it can go out and look at those accept header for the different types and go find an appropriate formatter that matches that. Right? So if I pass an accept header and say I want text/calendar, right, then I should get, for in this case, my calendar formatter because it's the only one that has that media type. And then we've got two fairly simple methods to implement. One is can write type. Right. If I give you this particular type, can you write it to your format? Right. So in my case, this one I kind of hard-coded. I said, hey, if it's a session, I can do it. Right. It's a session calendar item. I can do it. And then we have on write to stream. Right. Great. Here's the type of object. Here's the value. Here's the stream and some context information. Write that thing out to that stream. Right. You create the output content for the client. So I'm simply going to use a stream writer and just go write an ICS format out there. Now, how do I hook that up? Well, we come out to our configuration. We simply add a new formatter. We say, great, here's a new formatter. You already know the supportive media types because it'll give them to you. And you can put that into your collection and keep track of it. Now, if we debug through here, Oh my goodness, look at all those web devs. If we look at the formatters collection already, before I add anything, we have three formatters. That's what's given us that default behavior so far. We have the JSON, we have the XML, and we have a form. What is it called? The form URL encoded media type formatter. Lots of long type names. Right? Essentially, out of the box, when you host one of these things, it supports not only JSON and XML, but you could do form posts, right? The form post data. So you could just post right out of an HTML form to your service. It'll get that data. The model binder kicks in, and it can post that information in. So we're simply going to add one of those things in. If we go over to Fiddler here, we'll see if it works better when I'm not. So we'll do session one. And we're going to say that the accept is text calendar. And then if we go look at the raw data, we can see that that's what comes back, right? Is that vCalendar format. So that's one piece, right? We have the content type negotiation going on here. Does anybody see how that might not work if I'm in a browser clicking a link? Yeah, the accept header from the browser, gosh, probably contains about a million things, right? Has all sorts of things in it. It may, in fact, have text calendar in it, but there's probably lots of other things with higher priority, right? The text XML and HTML and JSON and all those things. So what I want to be able to do is provide a link that we can use. And you probably can't see that. Oh, is it going to show up? There we go. All right. So I want to be able to do something like this. All right. Session/1. So give me the session. And then I'm going to give you some key value or something for a format. Right? It could be an extension. Could be something else. And that's where my message handler comes in. So we've got our formatter, And we can add that in, and it works with the accept headers. But a message handler is going to allow me to plug into that pipeline before we get to dispatching, before we get to figuring out which formatter to use, and have some impact on that. So I've created a class called the Media Type Path Mapping Handler. And it simply takes a set of mappings, basically key value pairs, right? If you see ICS, then it's text/calendar. And so it's going to walk through those items. And it's just going to find, right, try and find a match for each one of those based on the request message. Say, hey, does the request type match one of these, the MIME type here? If so, great, that's my map. And here I'm walking through the try match that gives you back a double. So I'm comparing it and seeing if I happen to find one with a higher match, but the first one will give me zero. So if I have that, notice I can impact the message before it goes down to the next item in there. So I have the headers clear, add in my media type in here that I've got from that map, and that's what will get used then to pick the formatter as we go down. Now, one of the key things with the web API is asynchronous, right? All sorts of asynchronous all over the place. And you're seeing this more and more in every Microsoft API, right? So in here, I'm using Visual Studio 2010 .NET 4, right? I have the task model, and I can use the whole task parallel library, all that task model in .NET 4.5. That means I'll be able to use things like the await and the async keywords along with these APIs as well. So it's a great thing that this supports both .NET 4 and 4.5 in terms of those programming models. Right. But when we hook these up, our message handler and other message handlers get put into that pipeline. When I call base send async at the bottom there, it's essentially calling down to the next chained handler and passing this thing all the way through. So you can have a whole series of these message handlers processing your message as it goes through. Right. So when I request that extension, it comes in and it finds that map out there, right, sees the ICS extension at the end, and simply adds that in and says, oh, yep, I found ICS. That means the accept header should be text calendar. That's it. And that's why when I click that link in the browser, I get the ICS back. So we've got a few minutes. Let's look at a couple other things here. We had some people that were interested in unit testing. So I've got a mock repository over here to help me out. Now I could certainly do a test like this, right, where I go out and create the controller, and I call that, and I get the sessions back, and that's kind of interesting. It's a good test, you know, the repository. It's all getting checked. The controller works. I'm not getting any errors. That's kind of nice. But I really want to test other stuff, too. I want to test my routes. I want to test my message handlers. I want to test my formatters, all that good stuff. So I mentioned that HTTP server was a message handler. And I think I also said we could host this thing outside of ASP.NET. So trying to combine two things into one here, right, in this unit test. But you can host your web API in any .NET process. So console app, if you so choose. Hopefully we're past those days of servers with console apps running and you have to log in to see what's going on. But Windows NT services, right, your own applications, you can surface up this this host. So we have the HTTP self-host configuration, right? Same concept, same derivation tree as the config we used in ASP.NET. And the same idea, we have a configuration where we can put formatters and message handlers and routes. And here, I'm also going to give it a base address. Right? Obviously, I don't need to do that in MVC. It's driven by IIS. But here, I'm going to give it a base address for it to use for routes and for opening up a listening port. I use the same map HTTP route in there. Doesn't look any different. I add in my service resolver. Which you're going to want to remember to do because it's going to try and invoke your controller. I got stuck on this last night. I kept getting 500 errors, and I was thinking, why is that happening? And then I realized, oh, because it can't create my controller because it expects an interface. and I've got no service resolver. So I plug that in. Then I have the HTTP server. So here it's the HTTP self-host server that I can create. And you can see I've commented out the next line, which is if we were hosting this, if we wanted it to come up and listen, then we would call OpenAsync. Right? That's what would cause it to go out, open up an HTTP port, listen on that port, and start receiving requests. Now, as with any self-hosted service or services in general, you have to have rights to register that port with HTTP sys. I'm going to be running, I would be running as admin if I did that, so it would work. But if you're not an admin, you're going to have to do an address reservation for that. But instead of doing that, since I'm in a unit test, I don't want to start listening on HTTP and actually pass stuff over the network. Right? I just want to have it go from client to server, and I have them both here. So I'm going to take that HTTP server, and I'm going to pass it into my HTTP client. Now, HTTP client can be used all on its own, standalone. You can go out and call the whatever API you want, Twitter or whatever API is out there that's REST-based with that client standalone. But it also takes message handler as a parameter, right? Because we have that parallel, that symmetrical programming model where I can have message handlers on the client that plug in on the client side of things. And as I said, HTTP server happens to be a message handler. All right, message handlers simply have a method, send async, and it has one. So I can pass that into the client, and what happens then is when the client goes to invoke operations, it's basically passing them right into the server. So I don't have to actually go over the network, but all of the other pieces are in there in the stack. Right? The only thing I took out was the network communication, which in unit testing, in my mind, is fantastic. So I've essentially kind of mocked the network there. So I give the client the base address, which matches my host. And then I go out and do a get async.result. That's going to give me back my my response message. And then from that, I'm going to get the content, and I'm going to do a read as async and tell it, hey, read that out as a list of sessions. Right? So whether it comes back as JSON or it comes back as XML or a calendar, right? I don't care. On the client, I also have formatters. And the formatters know how to take that response message and deserialize it and bring it back into my structure. So certainly you could read that off as a stream. You could read it as just a JSON array if you want and have raw programming. But if you want to have that type programming model on the client, you can do that as well. Right. Just for fun, we'll run all our tests and see what I've broken. Actually passed. I know you're supposed to start with red and then make them green, but we're running out of time. So we have the client model, we have the self-host model, and we have this great story around unit testing. Notice that all the pieces that were there, all right, I put my service resolver and all the other pieces in there. I was able with the service resolver to have my my services resolved to my mocks, right? So everything from the configuration looks pretty much the same, allowing me to mock what I want to mock and pass in those details. I get to test the routes. I get to test the controller all the way through and see end-to-end that service working. All right. So hopefully that gives you a sense of Web API and the different levels that you can go in and plug in there. Really the key is it's focused on HTTP. Right? We're building these services for reach and for accessibility. If you look at almost any big service today, whether it's the stuff Microsoft is doing with Windows Azure, whether it's stuff that Amazon is doing or Google or Facebook, you know, any of these huge companies, they're not building SOAP web services much anymore. And if they are, they're certainly not talking about them. Right? They're building REST services. They're building HTTP-focused services. Right? And Web API is going to allow you to do that in a nice, clean model, testable, extensible. You have control over the format. Now we're going to close with OneNote, not the application OneNote, but OneNote. OneNote could be RESTful. There's Web API, and there's HTTP services, and there's REST services. Right? You can get into whatever kind of debates you want to and about REST and, you know, pure REST and not pure REST. Web API is not going to force you to do REST. Web API will enable you to do REST. Right? Web API is strictly about focusing on the protocol, focusing on the resources and the addressability. It's up to you if you want to kind of take it the step further to embrace REST and embrace things like hyperlinking, right, and hypermedia, and being able to see that, oh, I just got that session back. It should have, right, with it, links to go edit it or links off to the speaker or, you know, these sorts of things. So Web API does not force you to take on REST as an architectural principle or design, but it enables you to do that if you want to, allows you to get really down close to HTTP, but also, as we've seen with some of the MVC integration, the controllers allows you to program up, if you want, at that higher level of your objects, your resources, and plug in those formatters and those message handlers as you need them. So hopefully that's helpful for you. I encourage you to go out and download the beta. It's up on the ASP.NET site today. So you can try it out. You can try out all the other great features in MVC4 with the mobile stuff and the single page application and all the great things they've added. And with that, I'll close with some time for questions. None. I answered all. There's no way I answered all your questions. Yeah. Yep. Good question. How do you do authentication, authorization, those sorts of things? Well, in MVC, you can put a authorize attribute on. You can do the same thing in your controllers here. It's going to send back a 401. So it's up to the client then, in some cases, to know how to do that. So one of the examples in some of the samples Microsoft has put together, for example, they try and go out and post some data with jQuery, and you can actually look at the status code coming back. And so they can see, oh, it's a 401. I'm going to redirect over to the login page. And in fact, you know, if if you're building a service, you could send back the 401, give them some payload that tells them, here's the login URL, right? Following the hypermedia, this is where you need to go to log in so that they can see that as they work with the service. So the same kind of things plug in with the action filters. You know, we've got some special ones that do that are focused on authorization, and those all kick in and apply here as well. Good question. So when I did the iQueryable and got back the OData, the question was, well, was that filter actually applied to the database? Or did you retrieve all the sessions and then apply the filter? All right. And the way the iQueryable works is when I'm creating that iQueryable, until I actually go to iterate through it, it hasn't retrieved the data from the database, right? With all the database technologies, entity framework things, that's the way the iQueryable works is you're essentially creating the query, and when you go to iterate it and access the list, that's when it executes the query. And so since I'm passing the iQueryable all the way up to my service interface, it's at that point that the filter gets applied, and it says, oh, I have this iQueryable. I'm going to extend it with a where clause on it, and then it starts to iterate. So the query would get passed back to the database with that filter applied. So it would do a select against the database where title equals whatever I passed in. So, yeah. In terms of the just in general or the OData? In general? Yeah. So the question was, how does it work with navigating child properties and things like that? That's where you get into the kind of tenets of REST and having hypermedia, where generally if I had a conference, in my case, for simplicity, I just included the speaker. So I would get back the conference with the speaker when it came back. But often what you would have is you'd have a speaker node and you'd have an href that would point you to that speaker. It would give you the URI specifically of that speaker resource so that you could go and get that. And a lot of people will use the href for the address, but they'll also use a rel attribute on that anchor tag and say this is the edit link, or there's oftentimes people use the self link. So if you're on a particular resource, even you're on that speaker, the speaker object would have an anchor tag that came back or could come back that would say here's the href, right, which is the same href, and the rel is self. So if you want to get this particular item, go here. So when you see those items in a collection, for example, you could find the self link and go and get to that particular item that way. Yeah. Is that way Yep. Yeah, so the question was, is there a way to expose metadata for this? I believe that's something they're still working on. In the WCF web stuff before, in .NET 4 and earlier, they had some help pages and documentation that would generate schemas or sample JSON and things like that. I believe that's something that's still in the works. They're aware of it, and they're thinking about the best way to do that, but I don't think it's there yet in the beta. Does the JSON serializer respect data contracts? Good question. It should, because it's using the JSON serializer, but I don't know if that's going to be the case moving forward. There's some talk about the JSON serializer maybe being a different JSON serializer after beta. So it may work right now, but you'll want to check that later on with release candidate builds, because I'm not sure if it will continue to respect those. Okay, well, with that, we'll end up a little early so you can get to lunch. And I'll stick around if anybody's got any other questions for me. Feel free to stop up and enjoy the rest of the show.